This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 937. What's up, everyone? It's David Green, your host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, here today with a Seeing Green special, joined by Rob Abasolo in a green sweatshirt. What's going on, Rob?
Ahoy. I'm excited. I'm ready to traverse the world. I just booked a 20-day stint in Copenhagen.
If you guys aren't following Rob on Instagram, you need to be. It was I was on the edge of my seat for days as he was going back and forth sharing, where will I be traveling? Will it be Holland? Will it be Copenhagen? Will it be Bosnia? I wasn't sure what you're going to decide on, but you ended up with Copenhagen, huh?
I did, yeah. So I'll be coming live for y'all from 5 hours ahead. I'm a little nervous about the time change, but it's going to be great.
All right, you know what else is great? Today's freaking show. We've got tons of good topics, including how to navigate tax benefits as a business owner and real estate investor. Who doesn't like saving in taxes? How to find crime data for buying in a neighborhood that you might want to live in. Cash flowing commercial real estate thoughts. How to improve the value of commercial real estate. And what to do when you think your job might be on the chopping block. Some really good stuff here. And up first, we're going to talk about using extra income to pay off your rental mortgages early or putting that money towards cash flowing real estate.
And most importantly, we can't do this show without y'all. So go submit your question over on biggerpockets.com/David. Pause this really fast and send me your question and then jump back into the pod. Let's do it. Let's get into it.
Hi, David. My name is Daron from Houston, Texas. And my question is the following. I am about to buy my first investment property and my monthly income allows me to make large payments toward the mortgage to pay it off much quicker than the 30-year rate. The property will cash flow a little bit, even with the current interest rates. And my question is it a better strategy to pay off the mortgage as quickly as possible using my own money? And then, of course, refinance once interest rates go down and then just repeat the process? Or should I just let the rent payments slowly pay off the mortgage and slowly increase equity at the current environment and refinance once interest rates go down, but just with less equity in the property? Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jerome. This is a great question. All right. What we're talking about here is a best use of deploying capital. So you're asking, the capital that I have coming in, should I put it towards the loan of the property that I have and pay it down faster, or should I put it somewhere else? Now, I know that you're cash flowing at today's interest rates, but our notes show that you didn't mention that's because you're putting 35% down. Here's the ugly truth that a lot of people don't want to hear. Properties do cash flow today. They often don't cash flow at 20% down. We've become accustomed as investors to putting down the bare minimum and thinking that it's supposed to cash flow at 20% down. Hey, sometimes I hear house hackers say, hey, I want to put 3.5% down and I want to live in one of the units and I still want it to cash flow. You're just making such an uphill battle for yourself. You can get cash flowing real estate, but when rates go up, that just means your loan to value has to adjust for that and you got to put more money down. So here's my advice to you, Daron. Rather than putting the money towards the mortgage, I'd rather see you save that money up and buy more real estate with a bigger down payment. So to simplify that, don't think about putting your capital towards the loan you already have. Put it in the bank and use it to buy your next property, but put more money down on that. That's why I don't want you paying off the loan in this case, because you need that extra capital to put towards the next property in order to make it cash flow. And if you're able to continue buying properties when other people can't, which is what you can do if you have more money to put down and you can hold those properties, when rates do drop again, you'll be able to refinance all of them. So if I was you, I'd be thinking, how do I save up as much money as possible to buy as much cash flowing real estate as possible with bigger down payments so that I have more of them to refinance when rates drop, and then you'll get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think that's good. 35% on 85 to 100K. I mean, I like that. Part of me wonders, is it better to hold out and see if there's a 20% down payment on a more expensive property and if maybe he could achieve cash flow there? Obviously, he probably explored that option. I'm going to just throw in my little philosophy here on paying down equity because I've been a big fan of this. I've been talking about this lately. I'm a big fan of paying down my personal equity, like in my primary residence. I probably wouldn't use my personal income to pay down rental equity or pay down rental mortgages. I would just use the actual income from the rental itself to pay down the mortgage. It's a fine line there, and it's a very subtle difference, but personal money, I don't use that to pay down my rentals. I just use rental money, all profits from that, to bring that down. That's my personal stance anyways.
All right. Our next question comes from Sean Chua in ATL. Sean is looking for his first house hack, and he wants to know, how do you analyze a neighborhood for crime rates? I've tried using city data, but most information seems outdated, and it usually can't give me specific neighborhood crime rates. For example, I'm looking in a 20-minute radius around Atlanta, but I'm not sure which neighborhoods are safer to live in. Thank you for your help. Well, this is fun because this used to be public information on a lot of the websites. My gut tells me they probably took this data down because of fair housing laws. It's often interpreted when you share crime information that that somehow relates to fair housing regulations. And so everyone says, hey, it's safer to just not tell you. So now you're going on the Bigger Pockets podcast and asking the same question that all these other companies said they didn't want to answer. And I'm going to let you handle this one, Rob, since you're not a licensed broker.
You know what? I try to look it up. Back in the day, the hack, if you will, was to go to Trulia and look up the crime map. But mm-hmm. I do think that sometimes that data does skew things a little bit. I remember living in LA, pulling up the Trulia map and thinking, oh my gosh, nothing in LA is investable or livable. Really, I think there's a couple of ways to do it. I think this is the very unofficial answer. Drive by. I drive by, and if I don't live in the same city, I will ask my realtor to drive by two times, right? One during the day, but most importantly, at night. And that's kind of my initial, like, I have to feel the neighborhood is right if I'm going to buy a property. And then outside of that, typically what I'm doing is I'm actually looking for like anecdotal stories or insights from people in the neighborhood. So probably not going to look at like a Nextdoor or a Ring app, because typically those apps are very like, everything is on fire. Do not, this neighborhood is blah, 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 you know. I actually look at Reddit personally, because you get a lot of people from the community actually talking about their community and talking about the nuances. Not an official answer, though. That is not how you look up crime or statistics.
You're doing a great job politicizing your way right out of this thing. Say a lot of words without answering the question.
You will not cancel me. Okay, so Reddit is how I get the personal anecdotes. That's step one. And then step two would also be like the Bigger Pockets forums and actually talking to investors in specific neighborhoods. The Bigger Pockets forums is really... if you want it from the lens of an investor or people in that community that actually have properties there, I think you're going to get a little bit more of insight that you actually need for investing in that property. And then I need my realtors to go and drive by, or I'll drive by two times a day.
You know what I think we need? We need a Karen map. I want to know where you got a bunch of annoying, nosy neighbors that are going to just blow up your deal, or like a NIMBY map where you can see how favorable the neighbors are. I just kidding.
Is it in the shape of a Bob?
That's good. That map? Yes, that's right. And it comes with a casserole counter. That's one of the ways you can tell how many Karens are in your neighborhood, is by the casserole count.
So can you tell us, I know you probably have a little bit more of an official answer. So how should someone actually look at the crime and everything?
Yeah, you're not going to get the data the way that you are looking for it here, Sean, because of fair housing laws. That's the short answer. But that doesn't mean you can't get it. You just have to do more work. That's all it comes down to. So one thing that you can do is you can actually call your local police department, like the Atlanta PD, and you can say, hey, I'd like to talk to an officer that works in a beat in this neighborhood, or a dispatcher that could tell me, hey, off the record, I'm looking to buy a house here. If you were going to buy in Atlanta, would you be nervous about this neighborhood versus that one? What are your calls for service like over there? You may not get that data that the highly analytical people love. You might not be able to put this in a spreadsheet. That's going to be very disappointing to all my Excel lovers out there. But you can still get the information. You're just going to have to do more work yourself. Another thing you could do is you can ask real estate agents that work in the area, but you're going to have a hard time because they've been trained to not answer this too. Everyone is just walking around, keeping their lips closed, all thinking the same thoughts. But yeah, because real estate agents are susceptible to fair housing laws too. I mean, that's truly is less susceptible to it than a real estate agent or a broker would be.
Interesting.
So we get this all the time. We're driving a neighborhood with a client and they say, what do you think about this neighborhood? And the agent's just straight white knuckle it, looking straight ahead.
Well, it's up and coming. There's a lot of good things. There's a lot of changes, a lot of interesting activity.
Yes, that's what you're going to get. So whenever you get that generalized answer, it might mean they don't know, but it also might mean they don't want to tell you. And so I'm just shooting straight with everybody here. This is the Brass Tacks Pockets podcast. We don't want you to be frustrated. So Rob's advice was really good. You're going to have to drive the neighborhood and look for signs of violent crime. So Oakland's an area that I worked in a lot. I also police there a lot. And my team sells a lot of houses there. And I can tell you there's certain parts of it that are much better than others. And you can tell when you drive through it. So the long and short of it here, Sean, is you're not going to be able to get that data anymore. It's been taken out of circulation. You're just going to have to be a little more clever with how you get it.
Yeah, I think really my stance is very clear. Talk to people in the neighborhood, because I just think there's the perception of what maybe a neighborhood is. And then there's the actual insight that you get from someone that's like, hey, All the stuff out there is a little overblown. I say this as someone that lived in a neighborhood right next to like it's on the border of Inglewood, and I mean, pretty much one street over is Inglewood. Dude, everybody told me not to buy. Everyone's like, dude, do not do it. And I was like, it's fine. And I talked to people and I drove it and I was like, I'm so glad I made that decision. And so many times I almost walked away from that property because of the scare.
The reputation of it. Yeah.
The reputation. Yeah. And I mean, my whole life would be different had I just listened to like what the scary headlines were, if that makes sense.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into suggestions for a business owner trying to take advantage of tax benefits in real estate. So stay tuned.
What if you could buy new construction homes up to $20,000 below market value? That's right, $20,000 in instant equity. What if you could use that same $20,000 to cover your down payment or score a lower mortgage rate? Talk about being spoiled for choices. Right now, Rent-A Retirement is offering investors their choice of incentives when they invest in a new turnkey property. Your options? Up to $20,000 below retail pricing on new construction homes, aka instant equity, or a 5% down payment credit. That means less cash out of your pocket. Tired of high rates? Use that $20,000 to lower your interest rate to as low as 3.99% and score free property management for a year. All right, well, now they're just getting crazy over there. Rent-A Retirement's final option? No money down investor loans. Take your choice of instant equity, low or no money down, or a rate as low as 3.99%. To learn more, visit rentoretirement.com. That's rent, T-O, retirement.com, or text REI to 33777, REI 33777, to take advantage of these limited time incentives. Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is, we're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. And I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. The easiest way to collect rent? Rent App. Rent App is a seamless, secure, free payment tool for small rental property owners like you and me. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit rent directly into your account. Landlords love Rent App for its unbeatable convenience. Isn't it time you made rent collection easier? Rent App, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord.
All right, welcome back. We're here with Lindsay Pete in Philly. She's actually from West Philadelphia. Rob, I believe you're also from West Philadelphia, born and raised, correct?
Born and raised, yes. From the playground, you know, it's where I spent most of my days.
What were you doing there?
I was chilling out, maxing, relaxing. I was all cool. Just shooting some b-ball outside of my school.
All right, well, let's see what Lindsay Pete's up to.
Hi, David. My name is Lindsay, and I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I am a new investor and currently have one investment property, and my husband and I close on our second one in a month. We own and operate our own business, and our accountant recently informed us that if we make more than a certain amount of money a year, we cannot deduct more expenses than we earn in passive income. The house we are closing on in a month needs some work, and most likely we are going to incur more expenses than our passive income for our property this year. We invest in real estate for cash flow, appreciation, and for the tax benefits. Do you have any suggestions for how to maximize the tax benefits with this income rule? Do you suggest that I qualify as a real estate professional by spending at least 750 hours a year in real estate and more than half my total working hours in real estate? Or is there another way to get all the benefits of real estate while working full-time in our own business? Thank you in advance for your advice and time.
Well, thank you, Lindsay. Rob, I'm going to let you start off with this one. You do a lot of short-term rental loophole work. What do you think here?
Here's my take on it. I would say probably going the real estate professional route going to be a little bit tough because figuring out how to spend $700, if she's not already a full-time real estate investor, she's not going to be able to get 750 hours in, especially if she does have a full-time self-employed job. I don't think that's going to be possible. However, what is possible is she could turn it into a short-term rental. And if she materially participates in the management of that short-term rental, in most cases, that means she's self-managing it and she's spending 100 hours a year and spending more time on that property than anyone else, she could actually qualify for bonus depreciation if she gets a COSAG report. And she can get massive bonus depreciation in year one. That's going to be the easiest way to do it. Otherwise, I don't know. I think getting qualifying for 750 hours is it's kind of hard unless you're just really full-time, like a realtor, a broker, a flipper, anything in the real estate space. What do you think?
I think there's several layers to this question. So first off, we do share these strategies with people because we want them to save in taxes, but they're often portrayed as if it's just like a push a button and get the bonus. But these things come when you make adjustments to your life. You are a full-time real estate professional, or you are actively managing a property. It doesn't come easily. You can't just avoid taxes because you don't like them. If you want the benefit of avoiding taxes, it's going to come at a cost, and it's going to be restructuring how you spend your time or how you make your money. So I've told people before, hey, I've avoided taxes by buying real estate, but I wasn't just buying real estate. It was buying big real estate, and the money that I make comes from real estate. I'm making real estate commissions as an agent. I'm making real estate commissions as a loan officer. I'm flipping properties. I'm making rental income. I'm selling properties. My gains come from real estate. I basically, because I wanted to take advantage of these taxes, had to change my whole life and structure my entire income around real estate. It's one of those things where you kind of have to decide, are you going to be all in on this or are you not going to be all in on this? It's tough to dabble in real estate. That's another way to put that. It's tough to stick your toe in the water and want all the benefits that come from real estate and also get all the tax benefits that come from owning real estate.
And also one thing that I probably should have said, I mean, obviously the STR loophole is like amazing, but your property may not be a good short-term rental property, so don't go that route if it's not going to cash flow or if it's going to lose money. That should be obvious, but some people, you know, they go all in on the COSAG stuff. And yeah, you still want to make sure it's a sound investment. If you want to learn more about this short-term rental loophole, we're going to point you to two places. You can check out Natalie Colodi's rookie episode, which is, I think, episode 368. Or you can check out our episode on the STR loophole on the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Show with Mitchell Baldridge, and that's episode 823.
I'll sum it up for you this way, Lindsay. If you want to get normal depreciation, you can only get the depreciation out of the property itself. If you want to get accelerated depreciation, you can only get depreciation if you're a real estate professional out of the income that real estate professionals make. But it's still the depreciation from real estate is used to shelter income from real estate. It's not used to shelter income from other things, unless, like Rob said, you take advantage of the loophole, in which case we have a short time period where if you're owning a short-term rental, you're able to depreciate W-2 income, which is typically done by like doctors or other medical professionals. But if you're serious about it and you've got that much income to shelter, my advice would be you buy a short-term rental. It's going to have to be expensive to have enough depreciation to cover your income, and you have a professional that you trust manage it to at least limit your losses if it doesn't perform very well, and make sure that the tax benefits offset whatever those losses would be.
I think that's mostly accurate, but I think that if you're a real estate professional, you can use COSAGs and the bonus depreciation against other 1099 income, just not W-2 income, because you can't be a real estate professional and have a W-2 job at the same time.
But the 1099 income you're talking about comes from real estate related activities because you're a real estate professional.
Technically, but you could also have like other 1099 like side hustles and stuff like
that. I guess, yeah, you could be like a person like me, but have a cleaning company or something. You could shelter the income that way. But in practical terms, if you're a real estate professional, you're doing real estate stuff. It's very difficult to say,
sure,
hey, I'm going to be over here as an ice cream store owner and I want to get all the tax benefits that come from real estate without being fully engaged in managing an asset.
Sure. Do you know that episode of Key and Peele where he starts like sweating profusely? That's me right now. The more we get into this tax talk, I'm like,
Yeah, you're questioning me and you're doing it with taxes. That's it, teetering on the edge like Wile E. Coyote looking down. Am I going to fall? Thanks, Lizzie, for asking the trickiest questions in the world. All right, so far we have somehow navigated fair housing laws and tax-related CPA questions, two things that everybody in our industry runs away from, but Rob and I are charging into the storm like big hairy buffaloes. All right, at this segment of the show, we like to get into your comments on previous episodes. So thank you so much for submitting all your questions and making a show like this possible. If you would like to submit your question, please head over to biggerpockets.com/David, where you can upload it there. And at this segment of the show, Rob and I like to get into going over comments on previous episodes. Make sure that if you're listening to this on YouTube, you like, share, and subscribe, as well as leave a comment so we can read your comment on a future episode. Our first comment comes from user MG1YP4XC1H, who looks like he made a fake account just to say.
I can't believe user MG1YP4XC1G was taken.
Inside joke there. If you guys caught that one, you're a loyal Bigger Pockets listener. And if you didn't, it means you need to be listening to more of our podcasts. User says, let's start a trim the beard chant. LOL.
Which, you actually, quick aside, was making me think you said like two hairy buffaloes. And I didn't know if you meant like two hairy buff, comma, fellows. Or two hairy buffaloes, as in bisons.
Bisons charge into storms to get out of them faster. That's where I was taking it. But you are a buffalo, and I suppose one might refer to me the same way when
I'm not
caught up on my beard. So I will say,
your beard is buff.
Yeah. I don't love it, but I don't want to cut it because it takes a long time to grow. I was hoping that as we went, it would sort of develop into something and find its voice. It seems like my beard is stuck in a perpetual puberty, and I can't get out of it. So I may have to actually shave it. Rob, what do you think? Because you kind of got a beard growing on the top of your head.
I've been waiting for you to build me a house without modern electricity and modern power tools, you know,
based on the hair of my chinny chin chin.
And of course I expect you to arrive to the build site in a horse and carriage.
That's right, and we'll store it in the ADU that we built to add value to the property. So Rob's trying to say that I look Amish. Let us know in the comments, do you think my beard is out of control, or should I give it a little bit more time before I make a decision and possibly cut it down? All right, our last comment comes from Midwest Matthew. Pretty cool name. I'm a newbie, but doesn't appreciation basically just keep pace with inflation? It couldn't outpace it by much at any rate. Seems more like a savings account than an investment, albeit one where dependents make the deposit. Am I wrong? Matthew, I love this question. Actually, I wish people recognize this more. It sort of does imply that real estate appreciates, but you're not gaining wealth. You're just keeping wealth you've already gained. That's one thing to think about. And if you're not investing in real estate, you're actually falling behind. This is an important mindset shift because a lot of investors see real estate investing as risk. I don't want to buy something because what if I lose money? They don't understand that not investing their money is losing money, and that not making money is also losing money. So no, you are not wrong at all. Rob?
No, this is great. For being a self-proclaimed newbie, Matthew, I think you really hit it on the head, because he's like, hey, I mean, it just seems like all you're doing is keeping up with inflation. And I've always told people you should think of real estate as a savings account. Like, don't spend it. You really, it's a savings account you can't really touch until you sell. So if you own a property for 30 years, you're paying down that equity. And then in 30 years, you can sell it. And great, you have this savings account that has gone up with inflation over time. One thing I would say, though, is you shouldn't just look at a real estate investment from the standpoint of appreciation. Because if you're looking at it that way, then yeah, it is just keeping up with inflation and it's a bit of a break even. But once you start adding in cash flow, like if you're making $500 a month for 30 years, that's significant. Once you think about the fact that the actual debt pay down has gone down to zero, that doubles, right, with the appreciation. And then you have your tax benefits too, where you're able to lower your tax bill every single year, keep that money in your pocket. And of course, you do have to eventually repay it if, you know, that's just the tax game. But if you can hold on to money every single year because you're able to lower your taxes, that's more money in your pocket that you can then reinvest into more real estate. If you do this 5, 10, 15 times, you'll retire a millionaire.
If you've ever had similar thoughts to Midwest Matthew, or if you like the commentary that Rob and I just gave, head over to biggerpockets.com/pillars and get a copy of my latest book, Pillars of Wealth, How to Make, Save, and Invest Your Way to Financial Freedom. In that book, I cover how many of us think that we're standing on a stairwell and we're like, well, I could go up the stairs, but that's a lot of work. I don't really have to. That would be like buying more property. But you're actually standing on an escalator that's going down as inflation is continually eroding your wealth. And you have to go up the escalator just to stay even. You got to run up the escalator if you want to make progress, which is what this podcast is all about. Trying to help you, convince you, and equip you to run up that escalator going down so you can save more of the wealth you already created.
Love it, man. All right, we got one more Apple review for y'all. And this one says, this podcast has changed my life for the better as I now own 5 properties and I'm a licensed agent in Denver, Colorado. I specifically love the tricky balance that y'all strike of due diligence and taking action. It can be easy to lean one way or another, but Bigger Pockets consistently places value on both. Thanks so much. And this is brought to us by The Man Cub via Apple Podcasts, which was actually, that was your nickname back in college, right?
Still is. Go by that all the time, rookie. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. We appreciate your engagement. Please continue to like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. And if you're listening on a podcast app, it's even more important that you go leave us a review and subscribe to the podcast there if you love seeing green and you don't want to miss an episode. All right, we're going to be taking a quick break, but when we come back, we've got a pending tech layoff question as well as how to get into real estate more seriously with commercial cash flow, where you have opportunities to do so right after the break.
Your competitors are fighting for your customers' attention. So how do you stand out? Easy. Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Reach new audiences, grow your customer list, sell more, raise more, and fast-track your growth. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business through email and SMS marketing, social media, and even events management. Don't know much about marketing? Don't sweat it, because Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. And with my boot camps and live events, I just don't have the time to clone myself. So I just let Constant Contact do the marketing for me, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com. Pretty good little episode, right? While you were listening, you could have been getting paid rent with RentApp. Landlords love RentApp because it makes rent collection a breeze. RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. Setup is straightforward for renters, and landlords don't need to download anything. Both have peace of mind with the digital transaction history. Isn't it time you made landlording a little easier? RentApp, the best way to pay or collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Listen up, business owners, because I've got some quick little math for you. Fewer costs equal more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Oh, also, NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. So don't let rising costs sink your business growth. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/biggerpockets. 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 The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting, from finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
That's Vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
All right, welcome back. Our next question is about commercial investments for cash flow and how Rob and I would handle a similar situation. The question comes from Ken K in Charlotte. Ken currently has 6 residential income properties in North Carolina. And Ken asks, what commercial real estate investments do you think are currently best for generating cash flow? Well, Rob, I believe you have 0 commercial assets. So why don't we let you start with this one?
I've got one.
Hotel.
I've got a hotel. And then, we've been in the trenches, analyzing another hotel deal in San Diego. But to be honest, like after all fees and everything like that, it's kind of funny. Like even a $7 million hotel deal after all splits and everything, the cash flow is really like, $100,000 or $200,000. So I don't really enter in commercial deals necessarily expecting to cash flow out the gate. I think the job that you have going into commercial real estate is trying to figure out how to get cash flow up, because the more cash flow you make on that property, the more that cap rate gets juicy and the more money you actually make on the back end when you sell the property. So for me, and I don't know, like you have more experience in this, but I go into commercial real estate typically with not as much cash flow, with the expectation to raise the cash flow, which I guess, I don't know, is that a dumb thing? I guess everybody does.
No.
But I mean,
you're not buying it for cash flow. You're buying a value add opportunity.
Exactly. That's like, I buy it expecting to exit that property with a 7-figure profit. I don't go expecting a 7-figure cash flow. Very rarely does that actually happen.
It's really a question of equity, which is nobody wants to talk about, but that's where the opportunity is in real estate today. It's incredibly hard to just buy cash flow, just get an income stream and not have to work. Everybody wants it, and so everyone's going for it, which makes it very difficult to achieve. This is an aptly timed question, because my next book for Bigger Pockets is going to be titled Better Than Cash Flow. And it's all about the 10 ways that you make money in real estate. And I'm writing the chapter on forcing equity in commercial real estate. That's funny, Rob, you just mentioned it. Because commercial real estate is valued by its profitability, the net operating income, you add equity to it by increasing its cash flow. The two of them work synonymously, right? So I don't know that there's an investment that's best for generating cash flow. You have to find something that someone else is operating poorly. So somebody in my mastermind had a property that they brought to Kyle, my chief operating officer, and they're like, hey, I got this hotel. It's in Northern California. My contracting business took off. I don't have time to work on it. I lose money when I pay attention to the hotel compared to what I can make as a contractor. I just want to sell this stupid thing. So one of the members in there was able to buy this thing off market, similar to how you do, Rob, with creative financing. Mm-hmm. They picked it up. They're going to move there. They're going to put some time into getting it ready. And it's like 20, 25 units that they're going to turn around. That's an amazing opportunity, but you didn't find it on LoopNet. You kind of had to know somebody that knew somebody and be in the right circle. That's just typically how it was for me. Go down. Same idea, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you find them, you're not just walking into cash flow. You're walking into a problem. And when you solve that problem, you earn the right to cash flow. That might be a better way to look at this. You don't walk right into fitness. You walk right into a problem. You're going to go sweat and be uncomfortable, and you earn your way into fitness. That is the future of real estate investing, at least until we have our next recession. Now, you will find more opportunities in investments that are less passive. And that's because everybody wants passive. They're like, how can I just buy something that makes a bunch of money and I don't have to work on it? So something like a car wash, it's real estate that's tied to a business. That is something that you can actually make more money in. The same with the hospitality industry. So Rob's hotel, he had the opportunity to buy that sucker because it's also a business. He's going to have to bring his systems, his models, the way that he advertises properties, his skill when it comes to design and management. There's going to be active energy put into that property. And if he pours it into there, ideally, the property will become worth more. That energy will grow inside the asset. Then he'll be able to sell it, or he'll be able to keep it and have it cash flow. So if you're in a similar position to Ken K here, start looking for opportunities that require active work. Get away from the passive trap and you're probably more likely to have some luck.
Yeah, to drive this one home just a hair more, that specific deal I was looking at was actually a break even at its current, and it was already operational, remodeled, but our job is to buy that at a break even, sort of maneuver the systems, if you will, increase rents. And by doing that, we think it'll go from 7 to like $11 million. And that's from increasing the cash. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's like from 200,000 to 400,000. And that's our opportunity, is moving that NOI up as high as possible. So I would not go into commercial real estate if you plan on retiring off the cash flow. You're going to retire off the exit.
That's a great point. All right, our next question comes from someone in the Bay Area who wants to remain anonymous, and I don't blame them. In fact, Rob, I'm going to let you read this one, but before we do, I just want to say to whoever wrote this question, don't feel bad. I have been warning people about this, both in my teams and occasionally on the podcast, for about 2 years now, and I think that wise listeners will ask themselves, what would I do if I was in Mr. or Mrs. Anonymous's position myself?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question here is, hi there, I'm in my mid-40s and anticipate losing my job in big tech this April. I have about $400,000 in savings. Congratulations, that's a lot. $750,000 in a 401k and significant equity in two single-family homes. $1.7 million in our primary home and about $700,000 in our second home that is a profitable Airbnb. Rather than returning to a corporate job, I'm interested in using my capital to make money in real estate. Concepts I'm considering are house flipping, BRRRR, and or acquiring multi-unit rentals. I live in the Bay Area, so likely need to seek other markets for investment. What would you recommend as a first step to building a new career and cash flow in real estate? And then a side note, should I take out a HELOC now while I have steady income coming in to give myself options? Creative. I like that last question. So I guess he's basically going against the grain here, because our recent episode was how to quit your job for real estate. And we said, hey, make sure you make a lot of money before you do that. And he's saying, hey, not only am I not quitting my job, I'm losing my job and I'm going to be a full-time real estate investor. My harsh advice here, tough love, is go get a job. Go get a job and do the real estate stuff at the same time. I think trying to build a career without much experience in real estate is not a good idea, because you're going to eat through those savings and your 401k, and I'd hate for you to do that without the security of a job. I'm going to assume that's probably easier said than done, and maybe he's already considered getting a new job, or maybe that's really tough. But man, I do not like this whole like, I'm not going to get a job, I'm just going to become a real estate full-time investor. That's not that easy. That is one of the hardest things in the world to do.
I am more worried about people saying, I can't find a job, versus I don't want a job. I want to invest in real estate instead.
Yeah.
And that's what Rob's getting at here, is like, sometimes you got to be grateful for what you got instead of just thinking that you deserve more. So what's your advice to somebody who is in this position where they're saying, I don't want another corporate job, which understandably they probably feel burned. They don't want to go back to a job if they're just going to lose it again. But what's your alternative right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still fine. I mean, it's like, I am fine with them undergoing like a house flip or a BRRRR. I just don't want that to, I mean, it's a long road. Like a BRRRR, they're not really going to solve their problem with the BRRRR. They've got 400K. Let's say that they bought a house cash and they BRRRRed it and they got their 400K back.
Now what do you
I mean,
do?
They might make some cash flow, yeah, right?
But it's going to be a couple hundred bucks. It's not going to replace your six-figure income.
And then if they are flipping a house, well, sure, they could make like a, you know, a $20,000 rip or a $50,000 or $100,000 rip, but that's going to take 6 to 12 months. And also the market could correct and it could still be a break even, or it could be a loss if it's its first property. So I, you know, I'm not saying don't do a house flip. I'm just saying you shouldn't just rely on that. I don't like it. I don't like it. I think they should try to get a job.
I agree.
And it may not be a job in big tech, unfortunately. I think you got to just figure out how to make money.
It's just a longer road than it ever was before. I like that you said that, Rob. It's a long road. It used to be a short road. Hey, start buying real estate. It goes up in value right away. Stop flipping houses. I mean, man, when I was on my like BRRRR run, I was buying them off the MLS. I would just have a meeting with my agent and she'd bring me a whole bunch of distressed properties in Northern Florida. And I just find the gnarliest ones that I could get at the best price that needed mostly cosmetic work. And that was all that it took. We were constantly telling people about this method. And if you got in at that time, there's a lot of opportunity. Well, eventually everybody heard the message and they're all buying those properties. And now you got people buying off market deals. So they don't even make it to the MLS anymore. You can't buy some of these properties because they get scooped up by wholesalers or other investors that get them, because they're actively targeting these things through direct mail campaigns and cold calling and driving for dollars. They're hungry for this stuff. It's not an easy time to go replace your income with real estate. It's a slow burn at this stage in the game.
I don't know. I want to give them something, but I feel like the advice is to not do this without getting a job. Like, do all that at the same time, of at least a part-time job, at least figure out what your fixed income is and do the other stuff with the nest egg that you've earned. But you got to earn the right to be a real estate investor before you do it. And they haven't earned it with one house, not in my opinion.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't. It just means you got to work harder to earn it. That's a great way to put it, Rob. So I like this. I think that this needs to be, I've said this for years, real estate should be the carrot that gets you to put your financial house in order, not the meal replacement where you say, hey, I don't want to have to work hard. I just want to do real estate instead. So ask yourself, what skills do you have? How did you get to where you got in your previous job? Who needs the skills you have? And how uncomfortable are you willing to get in order to start a new opportunity? I am constantly telling my employees, we need to be asking, where is their demand in the market and how do I meet it? Because if you're not asking that question, you know what question they end up asking instead, Rob? What's the easiest way that I can make the most money?
Yeah.
It's a problem right now. Yeah. That's the question that you ask when the economy is amazing and you're full of options. But when your options go away, if you still have that old mindset, you're going to get hurt. So for everybody listening to this, please take us serious. We love you. And that's why we're talking about this. If you got a competitive advantage, you can do it. But this might be the time to look at how you can go get a different job and how you can improve your skills.
And scene. We're going to leave them with a little fluffy, nice rainbow and butterfly tip there.
But as a side note, you did ask us, should I get my HELOC now before I lose my job? That's a hell yes. Go get the HELOC while your debt to income ratio.
Yeah, definitely need that. Absolutely.
Just don't take the money out because it's not free money. You still have to pay for that. So you want the HELOC available to you, but you don't want to actually go spend that money until you have a really compelling reason to do so.
But you will never get that HELOC back if you don't get a W-2. So you may as well at least qualify for it now.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Seeing Green, the podcast where we give it to you straight and healthy, just like your vegetables. And we enjoy all of you that have been with us today. If you like the show, please make sure you stop what you're doing right now and go subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to them. And if you're on YouTube, make sure you leave us a comment. Then head over to biggerpucks.com/David and submit your question. We want to know. If you would like to know how to get in touch with Rob or I, you can find our information in the show notes. And if you got a minute, check out another Bigger Pockets podcast. This is David the Hairy Buffalo Green for Rob the Squishmallow Abasolo. Signing off.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.